Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Well, the Media Project is once again underway and an opportunity for us to comment on the media issues of the week, an opportunity for us to have a little fun here, a little commentary. Judy Patrick is here, the editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady.
It is really nice to be back here today.
Wonderful to see you. I haven't seen you since summertime. Dr. Alan Shartok is here looking just healthy and vim and full of squinting at me. This does not look good. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. I'm not going to give him a chance to say anything anyway, so.
I think we can have our way with him today.
We can, absolutely. How's it going there, Professor?
Well, we're good. We've just raised $1 million for WAMC, and, you know, it's unlike anything that anybody else does in the country. It's, for this size audience, it's just a magnificent tribute to the people who listen to the radio station. But I have to tell you, that many, we read every comment, well, like Alan, I don't like Alan, you know, that kind of thing. There have been several which have said, make the Media Project into an hour.
Oh, the idea.
I mean, I'm talking about, I'd say hundreds of people have said that. Now, you know, I think most people out there don't know that I'm sitting next to two of the busiest people in the county, if not the state, the editors of their respective newspapers, the Schenectady Gazette or the Independent Gazette, and Rex Smith, the head of the Times Union. And, you know, you guys are very much in demand. So that half an hour becomes a huge chunk out of your day, doesn't it, to budget it?
Well, yes, it's not just a half hour. Of course, we have to drive here and we have to hang out and get you in good shape so that you can do the show.
Yeah, sober me up.
Did they say why they want to?
Yeah, they love the program.
Really? Well, it's very nice of people.
You know that this program is the number one podcast at the from the WMC offerings. The number one podcast, people. And, you know, if the podcast thing, whatever it is, breaks down.
Oh, I love the podcast
thing. Yeah. If it breaks down, we hear about it. And
really? That's
how you know.
Well, that's great.
You know, there are days that the radio station with, you know, 400,000 listeners is off the air for one mechanical thing or another. It takes a little while before anybody figures it out. But not the podcast of the Media Project.
Huh. You know, we don't do much with podcasts at timesunion.com.
Well, who cares?
Maybe we should do more.
I think young people are more and more listening to podcasts. It's kind of like destination radio. I can listen to it at my convenience.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That's very well said, Judy. Yes.
Destination radio. That's an interesting idea. I understand that there is a rating slide for public radio.
Yeah. Can generally. I try to explain it as I understand it? Because I'm not really sure. but let me explain what happened. In the old days, the people who measured these things, you know, Nielsen, Arbitron, and all the rest, were sending out books.
Ah.
Rating books.
The diary.
The diaries. Yeah. They'd say, here's a dollar if you do this, or whatever, 50 cents, whatever it is, if you do it. Well, it was open to interpretation. And in fact, if somebody called me and said, I got a book, I had to report them. Because it was subject to manipulation, and we weren't sure, they weren't checking up on us to make sure that we weren't doing this. Well, there were people who loved a particular radio station and would write down that they were listening to that radio station 24 hours a day. Now, what happened is that for some reason, and that I don't understand, led to an overamplification of the number of people who were listening to the radio. And they would figure it out based on how many books they got back. But if one person got reported by me, just one book, that would severely affect the way in which WAMC's numbers were. Then along came the engineering geniuses, and they hooked up people meters so that they knew when people were actually listening to the radio.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people meter. No. Sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, thanks. That's right. Leave the humor to me. And as a result of that, they now have a much more accurate picture of who is listening to all radio. And the slide has been somewhat daunting in the number of people. However, here's the real problem. There are a number of people out there who are still doing it the old way. They only have the top 48 stations. So presumably, if I'm following this correctly, and maybe I'm not, the people who were there doing it the old way with the books and the rest of it, they still have higher numbers. Now, it gets even more complicated. Are you glad you asked?
No, I'm sorry. I'm falling asleep at the microphone. No, this is thrilling, though.
But here's what's interesting. Here's what's interesting. We pay, the public radio people pay National Public Radio based on how many people are listening to them.
And so has your charges been going down?
Not yet. But I intend to make that point. Because if I know NPR well enough, I know what they'll do is adjust it so that if you have fewer listeners, you pay more anyway.
Well, you know, the Associated Press is charging us all less than they used to charge. AP had to adjust their rates because of declining readership. This about 5 years ago, there was a big hullabaloo about this. And
you got together?
Well, because it's a cooperative.
And AP, the banks are made of marble.
And we told them to stop.
Well, theoretically, National Public Radio is a cooperative also, theoretically.
Well, there you go.
But in fact, the tail has been wagging the dog for a long, long time. Now, it gets even more interesting. Would you like to hear about this?
I really wouldn't. No. So anyway.
No, but this is fascinating.
Do we have a choice?
Yes.
Okay.
This is fascinating.
Okay, this part's going to be good.
Mitt Romney. Remember?
Is debates, I've heard of him. Yeah.
Debates Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the moderator, Jim Lehrer, asks him a question, says, what would you do to lower the amount of money that the country spends to get us out of debt?
Right.
And he now gives his list. And guess what's first on his list?
And a very popular Halloween costume this year as well.
Absolutely.
Big Bird. Yes. And public broadcasting is first on his list. What he's saying is, you suckers, we're not going to support you. If you want your listeners to support you, okay, that's okay. But we're not going to give you any money. Well, we ran a whole fund drive on that. People were calling. I didn't do it on purpose, of course. But people were calling up day and night to saying, don't kill Big Bird. Well, we went right to PBS, not NPR, but who have the Big Bird. And we ordered up a whole bunch of beanbag Big Birds. And they have been a very popular premium in the fund drive. Now, isn't that interesting that he would say that the number one thing, we're talking about a flea here, in the whole country.
Yeah.
Not a nuclear submarine, not another airplane or a helicopter that the president doesn't even want for $1 billion. The number one thing is this tiny, teensy little amount of money we give to public broadcasting. So that is what I'm saying to you.
Well, I liked the fact that the Chicago Sun-Times TV critic said that trying to balance the budget by eliminating PBS is like me saying I'm going to lose weight by trimming my nails.
Yeah, I love that.
I love that.
Great quote, huh?
That's so right.
Anyway, I mean, it's an interesting thing to think about. Growing audience these days is such a difficult chore for all of us. So I was interested in the comment by J.J. Orr, the general manager of Marketplace. My old classmate, J.J., who said that flat seems to be the new up. I think we would all be happy with flat audience, you know?
Well, that's right. And flat, of course, was Scruggs' partner.
So, Alan, is listenership down? Is it flat?
No, I think we have the same number of people we always had. They're just measuring it a different way.
Yeah.
That's what I think happened. Now, in the case of newspaper readership, you both are editors of fine newspapers. That has fallen precipitously.
Well, again, print has fallen, but our readership online has grown.
Right,
so
we would say the readership is growing.
Mm-hmm. But what you wouldn't say, I don't think, is that you have enough money out of
the new thing. You know, we're all trying to figure out what, obviously, the revenue model, what the financial model will be going forward, because you put a paywall around it and you lose some of the advertising revenue.
Which one of your papers has done. Paper, hasn't it?
You put a, we've had a paywall for quite a few years.
That's right.
And Glens Falls Post Star does as well. Many people do. The trade-off is you lose the great number of hits, but... You know, we bounce back a little bit once we put the paywall up.
In terms of the amount of money you're getting?
In terms of the number of hits. we're
getting. Oh, really?
Yeah, our readership is pretty good. Not everything is behind the paywall at our site, but it's been fairly
just enough
successful.
To tease people a little bit,
just
right?
Just a little bit of a tease.
You're such a tease. And then, Rex, your paper has not put the paywall
not
up.
Yet. We'll get there. I mean, I think that all of us will at some point have some paywall or other method. Maybe it will be for only people outside the DMA, outside the market area. Maybe it will be for some of the papers, for example, the paper that my company owns in Houston is going to establish a second website, which is what the Boston Globe has done.
And what's the advantage of that?
Well, one will be for a lot of traffic. One will be to generate advertising revenue. And that will be, the content will be really lively and it will be aimed at drawing audience. The more serious news site will be perhaps behind a paywall. And that will be aimed at drawing revenue from people who really care about the news instead of trying to get it both ways.
Now, the Berkshire Eagle, where I'm the Saturday columnist, has a thing called No Inky Fingers.
Yeah, we've all got that.
And that means you can read the paper.
Yeah.
The whole paper, right? So you've all got that. But does everybody get that, or do you have to pay for that?
You pay for it.
Pay for it.
You pay for it. You can get it with, like, I don't know, do you charge like an extra penny or something?
No, it's an extra 50 cents. And, you know, when it comes to counting paper, we count those readers as readership. So when AP assesses us based on our circulation, ours has actually gone up because our circulation numbers are high because people are actually paying for our.
Now, we don't count that as an extra. If a person already subscribes to the paper, we don't count that as a second subscription the Gazette does. So our numbers are not quite, we have apples and oranges.
So you're basically saying that you don't approve of the way that the Schenectady paper does it because you think it's dishonest.
He's saying it's just different.
It's just different.
Just different. That's what one's mother would say. You're all, okay, but I want to offer both of you an apology.
Oh, okay. Watch that out.
Well, because if in any way this has become a competition, between, you know, if I've implied that we're better than you are here at Public Radio, I want to apologize for that.
Oh, man, I didn't even hear that.
Well, it was between the lines because you guys are in there trying to figure out how to put the best face on what you got, and we are doing extremely well. And so I want to apologize because it may sound like I was picking on you.
Yeah. Well, we raise $1 million faster than you do, but that's all right. It's just just a different mode of doing it.
Yes,
that's right.
You certainly do.
Very glad to.
You certainly do. Bloodsuckers.
No, we're very glad to have the success of public radio in this community, thanks to WAMC. It's a really wonderful thing. So now we have to talk a little bit about news coverage here, you know, because that is, after all, what we're up to. And there is one of the questions, Alan brought up the presidential debate. One of the issues that jumped out in advance of the vice presidential debate is this controversy about the moderator, Barack Obama, having attended her wedding to her first husband. And it just goes to that whole question of the necessity of being so independent, you know, and being, what's the saying about the wife? Cleaner than
Caesar's wife.
Caesar's wife. That's right. She's got to be clean. Now, Martha Raddatz, this is now 20 years ago, 21 years ago, when Barack Obama was a law student, unknown. But it does raise a question as to how a journalist is supposed to function in this world and be so perfectly independent as to not have any connections to anybody in a position where they might be covering them.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because on my block, we have a guy who lives several houses up, and he has got a Scott Brown. I live in Massachusetts. He's got a Scott Brown thing on his lawn. I know my wife, the lovely Roselle, would love to put an Elizabeth Warren sign up because she has her rights. Why should I override it in my attempt to appear fair?
Yeah, when I first saw the story, I thought to myself, yes, the moderator needs to be as clean as Caesar's wife, is the expression.
We don't know, but if not, we'll have 100 people emailing.
But then, you know, you got to go back to the original things that editors do is take a look at the facts. So it was more than 20 years ago. He was a friend of the husband. They're divorced now. Has she been a friend of Obama's for 20 years? Has her reporting for the last 20 years been biased one way or the other? Why is ABC still continuing to employ her if she is biased? Take all those into consideration. Sure, there are a lot of reporters out there that can moderate this debate and probably do a good job, but reporters do have to have relationships and friends. I don't like them to have relationships and be friends with politicians or people they cover, but finding...
Or who cover them.
Or who cover them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But can I go just a little further into this? And would the judge give me permission to, would the judge get to treat the witness as somewhat hostile?
What now?
Okay, so let me ask you this. It's where you draw the lines. So now I was struck by the fact that this was the first husband, Martha Raddatz's first husband, that Barack Obama went to the wedding with. Did he go to the wedding with the second husband also? The second husband?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, now, is it therefore okay if people get divorced, do you get a free buy? Are you following me? I'm a little tired from the phone.
How big was the wedding? Was it a small?
Well,
it's like way too.
But Judy's point, the broader point
my
is.
My tongue is in my cheek, of course.
Really hard to be so pure about this sort of thing. But I think, Alan, you're right to say that you don't want your wife to be active politically. We have the same thing. Of course, it's a convenient dodge. You don't have to give any money to candidates.
I always say that on the phone when they call me up. I'm a journalist. I can't.
I can't. My wife has given to campaigns. Quietly. She doesn't do it to local campaigns, but she does in her name, and she uses her maiden name always.
And which ones does she give to?
I will just not speak to that, actually.
All America wants
to
know.
And I'm not enrolled in a political party.
Me neither.
Yeah, but my wife is. And I think that you have to recognize that in a contemporary world, spouses don't necessarily reflect the views of their spouse. That is the plural of spouse, isn't it?
That's very funny.
Something to that. Right. Well, I do the best I can. You're right. I should leave the humor to you. All right. Let's talk about covering religion. Jim Lehrer used to say, new topic, new question. 1 in 5 Americans now say they have no religion. That number has been growing significantly, according to the Pew Research Foundation.
Pew.
And that's the highest percentage ever. And the question is, what do you do in terms of coverage? Now, do you do religion coverage?
We write a lot about religion, and we write a lot about declines in mainstream religion and the rise of new kinds of religion. We cover all sorts of religious things, but the absence of religion is a little difficult.
I don't get it. What do you mean? Mm-hmm.
How can you cover a void? It's like cover the null set.
Actually, we changed the name of our religion page to Faith and Values, and we have had humanists write a column on the page. We have a regular weekly column called Voices of Faith.
Just so everybody knows, a humanist generally, you know, is not a religious person.
Yes, it's a term that is applied generally to atheism. And we always try to do it carefully because we know that the religion page, which we still refer to it generally, but the Faith and Values page is really important to some people. And I moved it up further in the paper to give it more prominence, in fact, because it still means that if 1 in 5 have no religion, then 80% of our readers presumably do. And people who care about it really do care about it. And it's hard for journalists to cover religion because of just what we were talking about. We're accustomed to not taking a stand on things.
And because everybody out there will take offense when they're able to. So in other words, if you say something, somebody's going to write in and say, that was a slam at my religion, that kind of thing. But I'm interested in another issue, and now that you've gone over all these demographics, and that is, what do you do in terms to discover how salient religion is to people? So if I tell you I'm Jewish, how important is my Judaism to me? Or how important is somebody's Lutheranism to them? Because then you as an editor, both of you, or as we say in this area, both of yous, would have to, make that assessment in terms of budgeting space in the paper, right?
Well, it's all context. It may be a salient point in one area, but not at all in the other.
I don't get it. I'm sorry.
Oh, it depends on what you're writing about. If we're writing about the canonization of Kateri Tiko Iffa, somebody has an opinion about it and wants to make a point, they're coming from a different religious perspective, let it say. But there's so many issues where it has no relevance at all.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's difficult to figure out. We don't have data to support how salient religion is.
That was actually my word.
Don't
give other cards.
I see. To our readers. But we think that it matters a great deal, though, you know, church attendance is down. The mainstream religions are not doing as well. But still, it's content. And we do stories, of course, on religious holidays, in part to explain to people who are not of that religion. We do stories about Muslim holidays and as well about Jewish holidays. And we recently did a takeout on means a story you take a little extra time on. You jump back.
You.
A takeout on Mormon missionaries in Albany.
I wonder why you did that.
Well, it's because of we're newsworthy suddenly. Mm-hmm. People are paying attention, and it's a very interesting thing. People just don't know much about what they're up to, and it is one of the fastest growing religions in America.
Well, that's fascinating. I tell you that you gave the positive reasons for covering it. But I've seen instances on certain papers in which, for example, Yom Kippur is not noted, or Hanukkah is not given, in my faith, sufficient space. And somebody will write and say, what's the matter with this paper that they don't do enough, you know, on that, you know, the aspersion sort of way to go.
People complain to me when we don't put Merry Christmas on the front page on December the 25th. And that is a hard thing to figure out, because I've never thought that a newspaper should be a greeting card. But there is a tradition of wishing people a happy holiday in a lot of papers. Happy Easter. You know, we don't do that anymore in recognition of the diversity of our readership.
Well, that's very nice of you. Now, your father was a minister. Your brother's a minister.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
And so what I'm fascinated by here is that's okay. Because, you know, you don't put, you know, Merry Christmas on the front page of the paper. You know, nobody's going to call you a name. But if you were a different religion, somebody could say that's because you're of a different religion, if you're following me.
You mean if I were to put happy...
No. If you did not put Merry Christmas on the front.
Oh, if I were...
But let's say you're Muslim or Jewish.
Yes.
Somebody would say that's you're not doing that because you're doing something bad to us.
Ah, there still are the accusations that that if we leave Happy Easter off, the accusation is that we're anti-religion, godless journalists. And the difficulty is, of course, journalism is fundamentally fact-based and religion is faith-based. So it is antithetical to the fundamental of what we do. It's very hard for journalists to cover religion because it doesn't fit into the way we do things.
Wait just a second. Mm-hmm. What you just said. Do you really think that Fox is fact-based?
Did I say Fox was journalism?
Well, they say it.
Sorry. Oh, well. So, Darts and Laurels from the Columbia Journalism Review is always one of their most popular things. Here's a great one. The Daily Caller is a website that reported this under a headline, 83% of doctors have considered quitting over Obamacare. Turns out that, of course, is not at all what happened. The question that was asked of the Doctor-Patient Medical Association, an advocacy group, was how do current changes in the medical system affect your desire to practice medicine? And 83% said, I'm thinking about quitting. Now, current changes in the medical system does not equate to Obamacare. Hmm. But the Daily Caller is a website created by Tucker Carlson, a noted right-side commentator. Mm-hmm. So... just is a little indication of the necessity to be careful where you turn for your news, apropos your comment about Fox News.
Right. And when you're talking about a poll, look at the actual question that was asked of people.
Yeah, but most people don't.
But that's the job of the journalist.
In the great debate, which we just had, they said to everybody the morning after, who do you think won? They said, apparently, I don't agree with it, but they said that Mitt Romney won. And then the polls the whole election changed. That's not good.
Did you watch the debate?
I only watched it the following morning on my bicycle because I got to sleep too early. That's the truthful answer.
Uh-huh. And you didn't think that...
I thought Obama could have done better, but I thought Obama was right in his position.
Oh, well, that's a different matter.
Well, because you people go around and you score it like a damned,
like a sporting event.
Yeah, a sporting event. There is the difference between right and wrong, isn't there, Rexy?
Because we don't take a position on the issues. We're trying to give people a fair report. We're not just being commentators with a biased point of view.
That is ridiculous, and I'm not going to say the other word.
So we're left to guess.
We will guess.
Stupid.
Well, with that, we have to go. We're out of time. Imagine that. And we have to leave it with just stupid.
Stupid.
But it's been wonderful, Alan, seeing you and hearing you on such fit form after million-dollar week.
We love you, Rex.
It's great.
And you too, Judy.
Thank you, Alan.
Patrick from the Daily Gazette, Rex Smith from the Times Union, Dr. Alan Shartok of Northeast Public Radio, and we're awfully glad you joined us on the Media Project.
Newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing.
They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling.